back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is now hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. I'm so excited and happy today because I get to talk to my good friend and fellow scumbaggery exposer, Penny Bright, who has credibility up to wazoo. Unlike myself, I'm not very credible at all. In fact, I would be closer towards the incredible spectrum. Now, Penny, when we talk about exposing scumbaggery, the one thing that always occurs to me is that people get really depressed when the scumbags in question don't get exposed right away. You know, it should be just like a wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, like prostitution, for example. The pressure, the press, the media, in my opinion, should prostitize themselves in the favor of truth. But instead, they tend to prostitize themselves in order to cover it up. And that's the extraordinary problem. If we had a working media, and trust me, these media people don't do any work. They don't do any research. They're lazy as frack, and they're airheads. That's the words of Ian Wishart himself, who was like the Walter Cronkite of New Zealand at one point. He says all the journalists are just their heads. No wonder they ain't figuring nothing out. No wonder they ain't reporting the truth. And no wonder why the ones that do get a very big talking to from the producers that work probably for the CIA or something. You know, it's just so well stitched up. This is why the media is no longer relevant. To a large extent. Not to say that they never report the truth, because that would be a lie. All right? But how truthful is it when you report John Key saying something that they know to be a lie and just report that he said it, rather than saying he said this and it's a lie? Mm. Penny, what do you make of the situation?
Well, I've been doing media stuff since about 1997, and this is what I learnt. Okay, corporate media, you can't control them. You can't, well, you can try telling them what to do, but that's just gets you offside. Anything that you get that's positive is a bonus, but if you sort of treat them as the enemy, I personally don't find that to be particularly productive. It doesn't mean to say that you should put up with any lies or crap, but by the same token, I know myself that I've actually had success in helping to get some of the issues out there with mainstream media, and I know internationally as well, when it comes to helping to expose corruption, like in Australia, when they had the huge publicity associated in the late 80s, exposing the police corruption, that's what helped to get the legislation which set up the Independent Commission Against Corruption. But if there hadn't
Which was incidentally staffed completely by police and prevent any investigations into New Zealand police corruption.
Well, the thing is that it's a fuss factor, and mainstream media can help in that. But and I think it's, I mean, I know that I've worked with some key mainstream media journos who have been helpful, not necessarily on every issue, but, yeah, like I say, anything you get that's positive is a bonus, and that's how I've treated it, and it works for me. But it's because they are corporate media, and that's why you've got to be a little bit realistic in terms of the Fourth Estate and them, you know, having a separate role. I mean, that's a fine ideal, it's a fine principle. But in terms of who owns them and who pulls the strings, I mean, we have to have a little bit of a reality check there. But anyway, back to the this Len Brown pants down thing. Like I say, originally back on the 17th of October, and this was fairly soon after it all broke in the press, what I said that there was a difference in my opinion between morality and legality. And should Len Brown stand down as Auckland mayor because of his 2-year extramarital affair, which has come as quite a shock to a large number of people, including myself. And I said, as it currently stands legally, in my opinion, provided there's been no misuse of public monies to finance in any way this unfortunate affair, then my answer is no. And then what I did, I quoted at length from the Auckland code of conduct, which I said, am I considered opinion as a gutless creature with no statutory teeth for proven misconduct? Because the key principles are supposed to involve honesty and integrity, public interest. They're supposed to declare their private interest. They're supposed to be impartial. They're supposed to be accountable and open and treat people with respect. They've got a duty to uphold the law. They're supposed to exercise prudent stewardship over resources. And when
in the satanic sense of the word, what you do is you just take whatever's right side up and turn it upside down. The direct opposite of everything that you just listed there is precisely the behavior these scumbaggery individuals in government and other corporations and so on and so forth.
The problem we've got here is that a breach of this code of conduct is not an offense under the Local Government Act. So what is the point in having all these fine ideals if it's a toothless wonder? And it says in the code of conduct, to avoid doubt, a breach of the code of conduct does not constitute an offence under the Local Government Act 2002. The exact nature of the action the governing body, local board, may take depends on the nature of the breach and whether there are statutory provisions dealing with the breach. But in itself, a breach of the code of conduct is not an offence under the Act. But get a load of this. So the code of conduct for elected representatives at local government level may be effectively useless, but at least they've got one because our central government MPs don't even have a code of conduct. And good God, they make the laws for other people, which include other people having to have codes of conduct. They don't have one themselves. But we're the least corrupt country in the world. Good God. Like I say, you can't make this stuff up. Anyway, so what was handy for me, I was able to quote from the action plan against white collar crime, corruption, and corporate welfare. Section 4 of my list of demands is that we need to legislate for an enforceable code of conduct for New Zealand members of Parliament who make the rules for everybody else. And 5, to make it an offence under the Local Government Act 2002 for New Zealand local government elected representatives to breach their code of conduct. And there are examples of codes of conduct that do have sharp, serrated teeth just over the ditch in Australia. You know, there's working examples internationally of where we can go for best practice. So it's, my argument was trying to turn a bad thing into a good thing, but that was before I found out that apparently Len Brown had been using hotel rooms at Sky City for his illicit sexual relations, which throws a whole different spanner in the works and raises it to a level which I believe involves effectively, it comes into more into the bribery and corruption side of things. Because with Len Brown, what people need to remember is that back in 2010, Sky City gave him $15,000 towards his election campaign. Len Brown declared it. John Banks got $15,000 from Sky City. He didn't declare it. And on the 27th of June, Len Brown voted in favour of Sky City in terms of the International Convention Centre bill. But if he's actually been using the rooms, and I don't care whether he's paid or not, the fact is if you've been using your hotel room for illicit bonking, then someone sure as hell knows about it at Sky City. And that means you're potentially beholden and you are susceptible to blackmail. How dumb. It's not just dumb, but I think it's a form of corrupt practice. And that, which is why my opinion is that Len Brown should stand down. And I also want to see the Serious Fraud Office do an investigation into this side of it. Because remember, Auckland Council never did any due diligence on the increased risk of money laundering at Sky City. That's on Len Brown's patch in his time. Not okay.
Have you got a hypothesis, like a working theory? You don't have the evidence for it, but what you think Len Brown has done and might be guilty of?
What I think is this, and which is why I stood against them as a mayor, because I believe that the people that really run the Auckland region are the Committee for Auckland, which hardly anybody had heard of until I actually managed to include that into my 150 candidate statement, word candidate statement, which went out to 1.4 million voters, when I said, you want to know who really runs Auckland? Try Googling. committeeforauckland.co.nz membership. And I know a lot of people did, and they went, oh, my God, we had no idea. Because who are the Committee for Auckland? They are like the New Zealand Business Roundtable, ex-New Zealand Business Roundtable on steroids. They are not just CEOs of major companies. They are CEOs of district health boards, CEOs of tertiary institutions, CEOs of corporate charity and also corporate Māori. And they are unelected, invitation only, $10,000 a year membership. And in terms of the structure of the of Auckland Council, the CEO of Auckland Council, Doug Mackay, is a member. Now, he's supposed to be an apolitical public servant. And the big issue to me is how many contracts for services provided by Auckland Council and Auckland Council-controlled organisations are going to member companies of the Committee for Auckland. But because Doug Mackay is not doing his job in a lawful way, the books aren't open and we don't know exactly who are getting these contracts. But the rates keep going up. And not only that, it has been Doug Mackay who's responsible for the inquiry into Len Brown. Now, because Len Brown's been doing such a marvellous job for the Committee for Auckland, and so has Deputy Mayor Penny Holt, who was personally endorsed back in 2010 by Sir Ron Carter, who was at that time the chair of the Committee for Auckland. So beware the smiley faces, beware the veneer of community advocacy, and watch for who's really doing what for whom, because the Committee for Auckland are very happy with Len Brown and Penny Holt, and why would they want them shifted? So why on earth has all this scandal broken loose? In my opinion, it's got quite out of hand because the election was actually quite phony. It wasn't left versus right. It never has been for the last 30 years. It's the corporate minority versus the public majority. And this John Polino, this American restaurateur who's never been to a single council meeting in his life, he wasn't really a credible candidate, but it was sort of like he was the pretendy right candidate against left Len Brown, when it's not that left versus right thing anymore. So it was just to maintain the myth and the fraud that it is left versus right, because John Polino's campaign manager was John Slater, who was an ex-president of the New Zealand National Party. So that helped to give it that veneer of so-called right-wing respectability. And, John Polino, he got nearly 100,000, got over 100,000 votes. Unbelievable, really. But the thing is that the Committee for Auckland, who really run the place, they must be horrified. And so, of course, yeah, let's put it in the safe pair of hands that the CEO of Auckland Council, the member of the Committee for Auckland, Doug Mackay, he has handed the investigation to Ernst & Young, who just so happened to be, they're a company that's a member of the Committee for Auckland. Nigel Morrison, the CEO of Sky City, is a member of the Committee for Auckland. And when I get speaking rights tomorrow at the Auckland Council meeting, I'm going to bring up to Len Brown, to his face, this major conflict of interest and why I believe the Serious Fraud Office need to do an investigation.
What time and date is that going to be happening, Penny?
Tomorrow at 10 o'clock at the Auckland Town Hall, Thursday.
10 o'clock in the morning.
10 o'clock in the morning, that's when the council... Well, what happens is...
Hold on a second. Why the hell are the council meetings being held during the day when people who have to work can't come into the council meetings?
Well, I mean, they used to have
them at night on like Thursday nights or something like that, huh?
Well, that's true. It used to be more user-friendly, but that's the whole thing. I mean, the fact that the Auckland region's being run like a business, by business, for business, all they want from the public is just shut up, pay your rates, be a giant cash cow, all pay, no say. Well, we continue to give the contracts to our corporate mates. I mean, it's as simple as that. And property developers. Don't forget the property developers with this daft, lunatic plan, the draft unitary plan, which is planning to, yeah, for all this growth to come to Auckland, when so many of the public are opposed to that, because the New Zealand Property Council, their head guy is a member of the Committee for Auckland, and they're totally intertwined. So, you know, it's big business of property developers. They're the ones who are really running Auckland. They love Len Brown and Penny Holes. So this so-called inquiry into Len Brown's conduct has got the red flashing disco lights, cover up, cover up, cover up, which you can see from 30,000 miles away, which is why, Lisa and I, we want to put it to the Serious Fraud Office to do the investigation. I believe that Len Brown needs to stand down and there needs to be a by-election. This is not okay. It's not.
Yeah. And certain so-called, you know, alternative media and whatnot should stop voting for Len Brown and giving his cronies promotion.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, in the so-called left, there are just so many phonies, eh? And I mean, over the last couple of years, I've never been subjected to such defamatory filth in all my life. And I've been an activist since 1972, which is, you know, over 40 years now. So, you know, I've got a proven track record there. And what gets me is that people who come from nowhere, folks, do a bit of due diligence. You know, as soon as people come from nowhere and purport to be activists or purport to do this and that, just Google them. You know, if they've ever done anything of note, well, surely to goodness, there'd be some record of it somewhere with the power of Google. Check it out. Because that's what we found out with the Occupy Auckland movement, which I was very involved in. There were a number of people who came from nowhere to Occupy Auckland and made a beeline. Anything to do with strategy or to do with the message or means of getting the message out, ding, 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 check them out. Because what happened was that that Occupy Auckland was made dysfunctional by some very dodgy people who had no track record. And they seem to, yes, I'm talking about Suzette Marie Dawson as being one of them, and she seems to have vanished now. Linda Ann Wright is another one who's still very involved in so-called activist circles, and I mean, I wouldn't touch either of them with a 40-foot barge pole. And if they want to take me for defamation, we'll fill your boots, because I can, you know, I can prove why I'm saying what I'm saying.
Whoa.
Hello.
Okay, we're on break now, Penny.
Yeah, it's quite a hoot, eh? Because.
Black sunrise, black sunrise. Always gonna be a surprise, because we don't know. Black sunrise, black sunrise. Shadow coming over the sky. Black sunrise, black sunrise. Always gonna be a surprise, 'cause we don't know. The way it's going to go. 'Cause we can't see.
It's gonna rain. What? Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's gonna be raining and pouring truth on the awful scumbaggery agents of the freaking corporatocracy that runs this gosh dang planet right here, 5 days a week on the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're gonna make sure, of course, that everybody understands this is a listener-supported broadcast. The only reason the show is on the air is because of all the people that donate. This is their fault. It's not mine, okay? I would wither and die away without your support, which reminds me, I desperately need a lot of support right now, specifically regular donations, because what we want to do is we want to move into a bigger house with a few extra rooms so that we can kit them out as radio and video studios so that I can invite activists into the studio proper and teach them how to do all of this radio thing and do all of this video thing and actually know how to use the equipment, learn how to use the operating programs and stuff like that, and teach you the basics in a day. It's not that hard. You just do a radio show, then you do an interview, and then you edit them both, and you're done. You know, then they'll possess the skills and the knowledge to be able to do it themselves, and they won't need me anymore. That way you've got a whole bunch of media savvy able to produce their own material content, activists out there, which can amplify their own voices and won't be so reliant on the odd mention and soundbite
horrible nature of the mainstream media coverage. God, I hate soundbites. I hate them so very, very much. They explain so little and yet give you a clear impression. It's really messed up, man. Don't let it happen, ladies and gentlemen. Please, for the love of Norwegian cheese, go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Get in that bank account number there, the Kiwi Bank for Guerrilla Media. Start up an automatic payment. $5 a month, $10 a month. Got some people doing $50, $100 a month. You know, more is needed. The more I've got regularly coming in, the better rent I can pay, because I want to have a nice place where we can actually host activists as well. If they're coming in from overseas, they've got to do video conferences or things like that. We'll have the facility where they can engage in interviews with people from all over the country, nice phone lines and the whole thing, and a room to stay in if they need it as well. You know, keep them comfortable, because for Frank's sake, when you're traveling the world exposing scumbaggery, what you want, I think, rather, what you really would love and what you really need is somebody who's got available all the tools and the lodgings so that you don't really have to pay or travel or do a whole bunch of other crap that was rather unnecessary and expensive in the first place. And that's what I plan to do with the place that I'm living. You know, Sarah knows about this. We all figured it out. We've got to get out of wherever the heck we are now, but it's going to take a substantial cost in order to move from here to another place, not only initially where you'll need a couple of grand, but after that you'll also need maybe an extra $100 or $200 a week in order to cover the extra expenses on the second phone line and so on and so forth, so it'll all professional and legit. So, yeah, if you can, ladies and gentlemen, please, I've given activists coverage like nobody else ever in New Zealand history. It's no competition. Not by a long shot. And we do it every single day because it needs to be done and nobody else is doing it. So I think it's time to expand and do even more and make this little operation here a seed that will grow into a giant tree capable of producing many more seeds of its own. Go to that VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Please subscribe today. And there's our ad-free archives up on the top left there. If you just look around the little writing up at the top of the website, you'll see ad-free archives. So everybody who listens to the show, you don't like ads, you know, you don't really have to listen to them, okay? It's right there for you for free if you want. I just encourage you to donate if you be so kind, if you want to do that. So thank you. I just really wanted to get that out there. Now back to my very special guest, Penny Bright, who also would need a bit of funding. By chance, because I remember your last mayoral campaign, Penny, you got into a wee bit of debt before the day was out on that one. Do you need some donations as well?
That would be great. Yeah, I mean, as you know, neither of us, we do it for the money. And last time, it was my family that sort of bailed me out, and I still owe them about $5,000, but, I mean, I'll get there eventually. But it shouldn't be like that. I mean, you know, those of us who run on the smell of an oily rag, yeah, we are very cost-effective. And what I'm looking for, I mean, I'd really like a hand. I've got about $1,300 outstanding from the mayoral campaign, and I need at least $2,000 to get over to this anti-corruption conference in Sydney at the end of this month. And the reason why I really want to go to this conference is I went to the Australian Public Sector Conference in 2009, because when your keen is mustard, you're like blotting paper. You go and you listen at the workshops, you mix and mingle with the experts, you get their names, you get the hard copy literature to take away, and if you do your homework, you get your head around it. So back in 2009, that's when I learned about lobbyists and how you need a code of conduct for lobbyists and you need a register of lobbyists, neither of which we have in New Zealand. And I also learned about post-separation employment, which is the revolving door between public office and the private sector, and there should be a quarantine period of, say, 18 months to 2 years, because otherwise it's seen as people getting in public office just to feather their own nest. And a classic example of that, of course, is the former Minister of Justice and Commerce, Simon Power, who went straight from that from being a minister to heading Westpac Private Bank with no quarantine period, and that's the bank the government uses. So that would be unlawful in Australia. But that's an example of this post-separation employment revolving door. So anyway, and it's a chance to actually, now that I was sort of the fourth highest polling mayoral candidate in Auckland, and I campaigned directly against corrupt corporate control, and they usually are very well attended by media, I can really help make a fuss. So anyway, folks, like $2,000 is 100 people giving me $20. Now, how hard's that? So Kiwi Bank, PM Bright, that's 38 9010 072 571900. That'd be a huge help.
And that's listed on your website, waterpressure.wordpress.com, isn't it, Penny?
That's a very good point.
If it's not, it freaking well should be.
That's exactly right. But if people have a look on my mayoral website, you'll get more up-to-date information on there. So that's www.pennybright4mayor.org.nz, and you can get up to date with the facts. Some of the facts that I'm giving you now, you will find up there. And so, yeah, I'll put a bit more information about there about, you know, if people want to donate, that would be really lovely. Just a little bit. If a lot of people just give a little bit, and off we go. Fuss making on the smell of an oily rag.
Yeah, and also the way that I've survived is because I've got a lot of real loyal listeners who have been listening to me for a long time and giving those regular contributions of a few dollars a month. It really, really helps if you set up an automatic payment. It takes a lot of the stress and pressure off, kind of thing. I encourage people to do that as well if you're donating to Penny.
Well, I mean, I'm just lucky enough to have a freehold house, so my sole income, I get $320 a week from flatmates, and if that was for a 40-hour week, that'd be $8 an hour. So I would love the living wage, $18.40. I wouldn't know myself, but anyway, I mean, so that's it. You know, very cheap to run. But I usually just ask. I sort of survive on that, but I just ask for when there's specific sort of things that come up. So just a bit of outstanding money from the mayoral campaign would be marvellous. I got 25 Corflute screen printed signs, and that was a bit over $1,000. And someone loaned me $200 to stand, and I got a new stencil, Open the Books, which cost about $100. So I need to just sort of get over the hump because I've still got power bills and phone bills and all that. But as far as you're concerned, Vinny, I totally agree with the automatic payments, I'm not in quite a position to help myself right now.
I had a really scary thought the other day. It's like a tithe. It's like a tithe. It's like the Church of Truth, and you donate to your prophets, kind of thing. I don't know why I had that thought.
Well, I mean, in my view, you know, if people can help send me over to Australia, it's an investment in fighting corruption, because I can tell you right now that that you'll get your money's worth. You will get your money's worth, because the thing is that I've managed to organise accommodation really el cheapo there, and I'm trying to get the cheapest possible flight. I want to get that booked in tomorrow, but then it's $2,000 registration. That's not cheap, but trust me, they're very well attended. There's probably at least 500 delegates there, and what I'm just trying to do is tell the truth that New Zealand. The corruption reality check is that we are not the least corrupt country in the world. We haven't even ratified the UN Convention Against Corruption because we don't have a legislative framework in place for openness, transparency, and democratic accountability. It's all bollocks. I might not be able to.
What did you expect in a monarchy?
And exactly. But anyway, so folks, if you've got a bit of money there, definitely give them a hand, because the concept of people trying to be able to stand on their own two feet and do stuff. I mean, you know, like myself, I'm so useless in terms of like my mobile phone. I can't even take photos on my mobile phone. Give me a break. But I mean, it's just wonder if I can do anything, really. I can do email. But, like, teaching people how to do this stuff, that's a brilliant idea, Vinny. Because, I mean, I'd like to have an opportunity to be able to hand-pick young ones coming through that have established a bit of a track record. I'm very happy to help give some tips on to how to be effective. Very, very, and older ones as well. But I'm not just opening it up to anybody. I'm quite fussy who I work with now. I'm interested in working with people with good hearts, good brains, guts, and a basic principle of natural justice. And, and I work on an issue-by-issue basis. Very happy to help.
I think it's about education as well, because I think often there's no rule book or handbook or anything like that for the kind of stuff that we do as a penny. We're charting new territory the whole freaking time.
Well, that's what so occurred to me when I was giving my little tribute to Vapi, just thinking, you know, she is going to leave a big hole in all. I mean, and there's others. I mean, there's the number of people, and it's sort of like you need to actually, rather than people at a funeral, try and think of how to summarise the key lessons and all that. Well, then, you know, maybe we need to make a big deal of 60th birthdays or something like that, and sort of have like a bit of a celebration and go through some of the stuff. Like, you know, this is some.
Or how about we start up a website with all the archives to her previous radio shows, so that people can hear her voice for generations to come.
That's a good idea, but what occurred to me, what I reckon would really take off is some sort of show, whether it's radio, TV, or whatever, wisdom and common sense from effective people. You know, just as simple as that. You've got half an hour, the ten biggest things in your life, your codes, the rules by which you live, what's worked for you, what do you want to pass on, you know, and just pick key people who you think have been effective in different areas. And it would be really interesting across the broad spectrum to see what came up in common. Because common sense, you know, people keep saying it's not that common.
I've renamed it platinum sense because it's the rarest element on earth.
But, you know, you can see what I'm saying. Eh? I reckon because so many people, they buy those self-help books, you know, how can I be a better person, all that sort of stuff. Well, I reckon there'd be a lot of interest in that. I do.
Yeah.
Anyway, just something to consider. But, before we all pop our clogs and it all goes down the Google, it's all...
Well, in fact, Penny, this is one of the ideas of Guerrilla Media as well, is that when we're teaching all the activists how to do all of this technical stuff, we'll be recording it as we're doing it. And so people will be able to actually watch videos of somebody being taught how to do all this and actually getting it done.
Well, right? We could have another go. I mean, we have a technical glitch with that workshop on effective banner making, because, we have another go at that one because I've learned a bit since then as well. But it's like, you know, just on the smell of an oily rag, how can you be...
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't matter. It's about doing what you can with what you got. Being creative and just getting out there, you know. Take a chance, man. Take a risk. What have you got to lose? You've got to lose your entire freaking country, but only if you do nothing. So get out there and freaking do something, or you're going to lose your country. And if you can't do something, then at least support the people who are doing it in your stead. We'll be right back.
I was toting my pack
along. Welcome back. We go everywhere on this show, man. And we were just talking about climate change just before. And I remember saying on the other thing, it's like, what's his name? Al Gore has said that anybody who denies climate change is completely insane. And I actually tend to agree with him. If you deny that the climate changes, of course you're insane. I just deny that taxing all of humanity and exterminating the bulk of it and for the sake of human sustainability and enslaving everybody and taxing the very air they breathe isn't exactly a viable solution to climate change.
Indeed.
But I could be wrong. Maybe if you'd gambled it on the stock market and speculated on it on carbon futures or anything, it would make it all go away. Because that's all they plan to do about it.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
And Al Gore owns one of these companies that sells the carbon credits to.
What
I think this stuff up.
What I think the way to do it, Vinny, is to actually, through agenda, you're in Agenda 21, I think it's Chapter 9 or Chapter 7 that deals with climate change. And once people understand that you're in Agenda 21, they were specifically excluded from looking at the role of corporations, particularly multinationals. So when you have that perspective that, oh, people in the world, the planet, the mess, it's all your fault, you mustn't look at the ones really doing the damage, which are corporations. Well, how fucking bullshit is that? Give me a bite.
I do believe that there is a lot of BS out there. And, you know, it's almost like the BS coming from the people who you know that are full of BS. That's fine because you expect it. It's when this BS coming from, you know, who, people you expected to be on your side or something like that or truth tellers, that's when it gets really kind of frustrating. Almost like righteous anger, I think.
Well, I mean, it's really handy because, well, sort of, you know, the Cold War's over, and so the idea that you've got to give the public something to be stirred up about. So it's like the state of the planet will unite everybody over the state of the planet, but we will, some through willful blindness and others from total ignorance, not looking at the role of corporations. Like, these are the ones that make the, you know, the munitions that help bomb, place and wreck it, they're the ones that control the industries that are major pollutants. Yeah, they control food, agriculture, fishing, whatever, and we're not allowed to look at them because that's prohibited from the UN Agenda 21. You mustn't look at the role of corporations or multinational companies. Give me a break.
Well, I think it's under a UN Agenda 21 that almost every single part of this control of the planet and the environment and the mandatory microchipping of everything. Basically, they said that corporations, what was it, public-private partnerships and that kind of thing will be the new government to a large degree. So naturally, they exempt themselves from any investigation, because otherwise the entire process would fall apart, which is incidentally the very reason why we need to be talking about this very, very regularly indeed, because Agenda 21, Codex Alimentarius, and these other world syndication programs and plans are being implemented at a frightening rate with stunning efficiency. We're talking about a total domination of all human life, transport, housing, you name it, forever. That's what it actually means at the end of the day, and that will all be accomplished within the 21st century.
Well, anyway, well, what we need to do is continue to blow the whistle till our eyeballs bleed, as it were. But anyway, just before we go, so tomorrow, just let folks know that in terms of being effective, it's really effective to use processes which are available. And the process which I'm availing myself of, as my fellow community activist Lisa Prager, is an Auckland Council governing body meeting, which we will be attending in the Auckland Town Hall at 10 o'clock. And my subject matter will be the apparent lack of due diligence, failure to address the increased risk of money laundering in the Auckland Council's submission on the International Convention Centre Bill, as outlined in the following regulatory impact statement, which I read you a bit of before. Number two, the potential consequences of Auckland Council fails to uphold the rule of law regarding the statutory requirement under the Public Records Act 2005, which is to create and maintain full and accurate records of its affairs in accordance with normal, prudent business practice, including the records of any matter that is contracted out to an independent contractor. And that's one of the things...
Does that include Len Brown's affairs?
Does that include what, sorry?
Len Brown's affairs?
Well, the thing is, the books aren't open, and they're supposed to be. And the CEO, Doug Mackay, he is responsible, his statutory duty is to make sure there's, accurate financial reporting. And so he doesn't do his job properly, in my view, and I've told him to his face, I don't think he's the duty. And he gets a bonus. Give me a break. Anyway, and the last point is, Point number three, perceived conflicts of interest in the inquiry into the conduct of Marilyn Brown, i.e. the fact that Auckland Council CEO Doug Mackay, Ernst & Young and Nigel Morrison, CEO of Sky City, are all members of the unelected, very powerful private lobby group, the Committee for Auckland, who arguably are not unhappy with the performance of Marilyn Brown.
So I don't think his missus was unhappy with his performance either.
And the last one I'd like to make is that, just to let people know, now everyone, of course, has heard of Kim.com, and what people need to remember is that the very same Ofcams who've refused to lift a finger over the increased risk of money laundering at Sky City, they were the ones that got the assistance of the GCSB to unlawfully spy on Kim.com. And they were the ones that organised the raid on Kim.com's property, where nearly 80 cops turned up. And one of the things he was charged with was money laundering. So I have sent a copy of this Official Information Act reply from Ofcams, Organised and Financial Crime Agency of New Zealand, to Kim.com's to be passed on to his legal team, because I think it will be of assistance.
I think it would be. How exactly do you defend yourself from, what was it, a 73-page report of baseless accusations or something? How do you prove your innocence?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because, I mean, I'm not necessarily on the same page as Kim.com and everything, but he's done New Zealand as a huge favour through exposing that the GCSB unlawfully spied on him. I was one of 88 New Zealanders. Well, I was concerned that I might have been one of the 88 New Zealanders unlawfully spied upon. I followed the due process as outlined from the Office of the Prime Minister. I asked directly the GCSB, went around in a big fat circle. They couldn't confirm or deny. Went, made a complaint to the Privacy Commissioner. They came back and basically said they'd heard from the GCSB. And, of course, it was unfortunate that I didn't know whatever the GCSB's been saying about me, but the Privacy Commissioner basically agreed with the GCSB that not confirming or denying was basically okay. Well, this is this whole Ahmed Zawi case all over again, the right to know what it is that you're supposed to have been, like, charged with, because I will argue with anybody anywhere that about factual accuracy of what I've said. And how can it be unlawful to tell the truth?
Here's how. When the people who legislate are the criminals.
Yeah.
That's how it becomes illegal to tell the truth, Penny. Is it?
Well,
they depend on their lies not being exposed in order to continue their freaking crimes.
Well, the last bit of good news for folks, and this is another really important thing, is the power of perseverance. Never, ever drop the ball. And this, of course, is the news that that John Banks, who the not-so-honourable John Banks, who was a New Zealand Minister for Small Business Regulatory Affairs, he now has been forced to stand down as a minister, because here the defendant, Banks, is now facing trial in the district court for alleged electoral fraud. Another significant thing, which was never supposed to have happened, is that now the Solicitor General, the highest acting lawyer in the land, has now taken over the case, and he was requested to do that by both Graham McCready, the private prosecutor who's been successful in getting Banks in the court, and people like myself and Lisa Prager, who made complaints to the police. Two out of three of us, we were the ones who made the complaint to the police about the alleged electoral fraud, and of course the cops sort of picked up the ball and threw it away, and Graham McCready's picked up the ball and he's heading for the try line. So it seems that if you want to make a fuss in the court of law, you need to make a fuss in the court of public opinion. And again, full credit to my friend Jax. I don't know how many times her and I were out there with the banners. You know, the not-so-honourable John Banks had all the class of a rat with a gold tooth, and the famous morph of John Banks morphing into a rat with a gold tooth. And if people want to find out more about that, just check out www.fodgyjohnhasgone.com. dodgyjohnhasgone.com, and you can get some of the latest information on that one. And but of course, John Banks, like a little cornered rat, he's got a he's trying to sort of come in sideways with a judicial review of this district court decision for him to be charged with electoral fraud, and that will be heard on the 27th of November in the High Court. But the Solicitor General is handling that one.
Is the Solicitor General or any of these other people also a Freemason, just like John Banks is? I wonder.
Well, the thing is this, in my view, is that although there's a lot of concern with some people about the role of the Solicitor General, I believe that it's a very straightforward case. And because the police, a lot of people are saying, well, how come a private prosecutor, an individual citizen, managed to get this a prima facie?
We've got about 20 seconds, Penny. Yeah, well, it is good. You know, you see successes and that kind of thing. I think we should... I think we should hype up our successes and kind of play down our failures sometimes, but admit them when it's necessary. We'll be right back tomorrow, I think, ladies and gentlemen. Catch you later.